pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello and welcome to Decorations of War. I am your host, Alexei Carr, joined by my co-hosts, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
And Levitain.
Good evening.
Our special guest for this show is the returning Nydia Masters from Pandemic Horde.
Six times I've been here, I've never actually been invited. I just bully my way in.
Nydia's like, Alec, get me on the show. I was like, yeah, alright. That's pretty much the extent of that conversation. But he has been to Eve North, where a lot of interesting information has been released, so this will be useful. Now, if you listen to Decorations War, then you're most likely interested in colossal clashes of fleets that dominate Eve's PvP, as well as some of the small gang stuff. If you've ever thought about leading said fleets yourself, or are curious about why those FCs do what they do, why your FC tells you to press F1, check out Yin Tan's channel for fleet and solo PvP commentary. Yin will walk you through the steps of getting into and winning fights. So check it out at youtube.com/yintan. That's J-I-I-N-T-A-A-N.
Sorry, he also did a video on like a political update. Like, I swear he was ripping off your geography show. Well, not ripping it off, because like it's a common idea, but it had a very similar feel to the way you did your geography shows.
Yeah, Yin has been putting out some politics and geography type content for a while. His videos tend to be shorter and more topical, whereas I've usually gone for longer stuff that's more like historical focus as opposed to a specific conflict. But they're great companions. I would watch them both together, to be honest. So speaking of Nydia and Eve North, Nids, your Eve North experience.
Well,
what was it like?
Really going into it, I had a problem. I'm a born and raised Montrealer, and Eve North was taking place in Toronto. So from step one, I knew I was screwed.
Toronto, infamously known as the worst place in Canada.
Worst place in the world, I would say.
That's harsh.
Is it, though? Is it really?
What about Alabama?
I mean, Alabama has...
I think simply by virtue of being Canadian, it probably has a higher quality of life.
Maybe, but, you know, it's at least it's not Toronto. Again, as a Montrealer, I have to hate them. It's like a New Yorker hating the Sox, you know?
Lave,
what a shitty hockey
you
team.
And I just sitting here not understanding what's happening right now?
I've kind of got an idea, but this is not my fight.
The idea is Toronto's a shithole. Okay.
I remember going to New York once, going to watch a Yankees game, and I pretty much learned very quickly how passionate it is over there. The only thing I can come close to is in Britain, like in football, as in real football, not soccer. So football as opposed to hand egg, get it right. Some of the rivalries over here are absolutely filthy.
Hand egg?
Similar problem, but it goes more than sports. We just actually hate the city.
I mean, their sports team sucks too. Let's not mince words.
Well, no, not Raptors
apparently. Yeah, they won the thingy and then everybody rioted.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm still not going to like the town even if they won. I just can't. It's against the rules.
But contrast that with the Maple Leafs.
Well, I mean, the Maple Leafs haven't won since 1967, so it's not a problem.
Weren't the Toronto Raptors a recent acquisition?
Since the early 90s, yeah.
So I was born, I wouldn't call that recent.
Okay.
Recent for us, we're old, come on.
For a sports team, that's kind of recent.
I'm sure our listeners are really happy about listening to sports and stuff in the Eve game. Yeah, I love the sports ball.
Yes, the ancient earth sports entertainment pastimes. Yes. Eve
so
things.
About that Eve convention that happened in apparently the worst town in the world. How
was
that?
Bunch of nerds showed up. So yes, Eve North was a smaller convention, but it was considered one of the bigger ones along the CCP's World Tour stop. And it took place downtown. We did the general thing where it was, you know, go to the panels, hang out with people you know. Apparently, CCP was expecting along the lines of 250 people to show up, and 500 people signed up.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, you know, it was at a decent place. One of the hotels is smack in the middle of downtown, so we were right next to a bunch of sites. Quite a few of us went to the aquarium next door, or as we referred to it, the Liquid Zoo. And we went to the CN Tower. CCP organized a whole group to go to the CN Tower, and that was pretty cool. Never been.
I'm waiting for us to actually talk about spaceships.
Spaceships, yes. Well, I mean, if we went and saw the...
Is this a meta commentary that there weren't a lot of spaceships at the spaceship convention?
In my case, I've been to Vegas twice, and this is my first time going to Eve North. This was the first time Eve North was an official CCP event. They've been doing it for years on their own, like, monthly events. But it was definitely a smaller one. It took place only over, like, 2 real days as opposed to 3 days of panel. But, I mean, I still had fun. Still got to see the devs and hang out with quite a few people you know, not just Americans and Canadians, or people with funny foreign accents, too.
I did quite like, with the programming, the way they squeezed it all together. Instead of, like, having separate development, like, talks, they put it all into one big talk and just called it the Eve Development Variety Hour. And that made it super convenient to, like, go back in and watch the recordings, because I only had to watch 2 things, the keynote and the Variety Hour, and that was it. Everything else I could ignore. And I wouldn't feel like I was missing something. So, +1 on that one. That was good stuff.
Yeah, in a way that was good. Some of the Vegas talks, they tend to, first of all, be quite spread out in terms of the ones you actually want to see. In addition to the ones that aren't filmed and the back room roundtables that only people at the convention get to go see. And are just mild discussions of, you know, essentially the same thing, people on Mumble all talking together. But yeah, it was definitely interesting to see the information a little more concisely put, and definitely the, as always, the keynote and the closing ceremonies were definitely the most interesting parts about some of the more technical things. It was a little interesting to see not just, hey, here's a new ship, enjoy. Granted, we always like that, but it was interesting to see things that, like, old stuff. The information about Discovery was really interesting about what was going on, and really... really cool, just in general, that we might have actually found something useful, and the information about the AI changes, and hearing that whole NPC groups were fighting each other without anyone involved was actually really cool.
Yeah, that is super cool. And I mean, the idea of Eve being a living universe has sort of been on the fringes of things to talk about for a while now. But as we'll talk about in a bit later in the show, it seems like they've taken some very active and big steps to make it a reality. Or at least in some ways.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it was quite nice to just see a lot of information about things they don't always talk about. You know, you go to these panels, but people do enjoy the game, and they enjoy all the aspects of the game. We don't necessarily only want to hear about, you know, PvPers fighting PvPers and fancy new spaceships.
What other parts of the game are interesting?
Well, like I said, you know, Eve Discovery.
You have to remember, Alec, Nitty is a Care Bear.
Wow, that's them's fighting words.
That's quite possibly the meanest thing you've ever said to him.
See, the thing is, though, he can't kick me while we're live on air.
You say that, but I probably could, actually.
We'll find a way. By the way, Nydia, Artemis, and Lave are all in Pandemic Horde. I think that's relevant to the show.
Join us, Alec. Come play.
I mean,
us.
Maybe someday. I've heard good things.
We are getting constant harassment from some new NPC AI behavior, and Alec seems to be immune, so he's got it pretty nice out there in GW.
Yeah, so let's just jump into that, I guess. If you don't have any more Eve North highlights, Snids?
No, not generally. Like I said, it was a bit of a smaller organization. It worked a little better for me. It was a lot closer than going to Vegas, a little bit cheaper, and still got to see friends and courtmates that I've seen at Vegas before, and it was quite fun. Definitely recommend if they do it again next year, the same way.
Sell your VNIs. Sell them now.
Yeah, are we going to circle back to talk about like all the stuff that was talked about, or are we going to talk about that now?
Well, I wanted to talk about it now.
Sweet, let's talk about it now, because rest in peace, VNIs.
So just to bring people up to speed, the proposed changes, if they go through, involve the VNI getting a slight tweak to its bonuses. The drones get more tracking, it gets a hybrid and armor repair bonus, but it loses 50 meters of drone bandwidth, so it can only field a maximum of 3 heavies as opposed to 5. So bye-bye AFK 5 heavy drone VNIs.
Yeah, so it's like all the nerfs to like its fitting and its mass and its agility and stuff that were just done to try and make it not a completely overpowered ratting ship have been undone. So it's back to, or it may even be better than what it used to be in terms of being a ship in Eve. And then it also just gets massive tracking bonuses and damage bonuses to all of its weapon systems and a self-repair bonus. It's nuts. Like, this thing is going to be super freaking cool for PvP nonsense.
Yeah, it's like a mini Merm.
A mini Myrmidon.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, it's so much like a Merm that it's maybe a little too much like a Merm.
I
was just going to say, I mean, here's the thing about VNI that most people don't remember. It was already pretty damn good at PvP. It's just nobody ever used it for that anymore.
Well, that and when it got its drone velocity nerf in, then it really got shot in the leg for PvP.
Right, but now they're sort of tooling it to be just for PvP, which, being in an alliance where everyone uses VNIs, goodbye and good riddance. I don't care. This was a nerf that needed happening for so long, it was ridiculous, and I can't believe they let it go for so long. It was so overpowered, it did battleship DPS in a semi-AFK way. I do not understand how it was let go for so long. It was so broken.
For the record, you still do that with an Ishtar, it just costs more.
I was just gonna say.
Yeah, the Ishtar, which costs about 6 times more right out of the gate.
And 6 times?
Like twice as much, depending on market fluctuations.
Depending on, depends. If VNI is like 50 million and they're like closer to 300.
I mean, VNI has got up to 140 million last time the Warzone flipped.
So, let's say 2 to 3 times as expensive.
It's
not nothing, but still.
It's something that needed to be done for so long.
And it super hurts bots, because bots can no longer be alphas and run VNIs. Speaking of which, the alpha skill set has changed. So now you can't get T2 medium drones, so rest in peace, Gila bots. And you also have lower skills for heavy drones if you're an alpha.
It's not just bots, though. I could tell you for a fact, there are more than one person in our alliance that flies 20 to 30 of these at a time.
That just shouldn't be possible.
No, absolutely not. It's so broken.
When we get to that, I don't even know how to feel about it. I don't know if like CCP needs to make a hard technical change, if it's just inherent to the game's design that it requires so little interaction and focus that you can play 20 versions of it at once. I don't know. No, but that is crazy.
The problem is, if you take away them doing that with VNIs, they can do it with mining. And nobody is going to make the argument that you shouldn't be able to do that with mining. Because core part of this. Well, okay, yeah, like, but you don't like mining anyway, so...
I don't like people being able to multi-box 20 clients at once.
The problem is...
I think
is,
it damages the health of the game in so many ways.
One of the things I really like about ISK making an EVE is that there are low interaction options. So that even at my smaller scale, right, I have 4 accounts if I actually use all 4 for PvE at the same time. That means that I can do my PvE, I can be making progress in EVE, have a sense of that I'm accomplishing something, all while watching Netflix or playing friggin' Minecraft or something. Like, that is one of the things that I quite enjoy doing in EVE, is making progress towards other goals while also doing something else. And in order to enable that, you have to make it such that if somebody didn't want to do that something else, if somebody didn't want to watch Netflix, they could also add in 15 more accounts and do it at a crazy scale.
I think a lot of PvE and mining mechanics lend themselves to the case of, hey, I could do this and watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Netflix or whatever. But when you start scaling up to those 10, 15, 20 clients, it just gets ridiculous. And this is the problem I always had with the VNIs and the drones, in that it goes from a case of requiring little attention being paid and just staring at local and refiring, pressing F1 every time your missiles need to reload, which is how we used to do it even 15 years ago, flying Ravens in NullSec, just reload every so often. The VNIs, by extension, the Ishtar, this could be made as an argument as well, that it requires essentially no input, because you just launch the drones. The NPCs will rarely, if ever, switch to your drones, and you just orbit around, never have to worry about your tank, and literally walk away. You can walk away for 10 minutes, and odds are you'll be fine.
Yep, so when I did the VNI ratting at my peak, I would use Near 2 and put my VNIs into their anoms and then set a timer for 27 minutes and go do other stuff while I have my speakers cranked up. So if Near 2 goes off saying, hey, Intel has been reported that there are hostiles nearby, I walk back over to my computer and dock them up. Otherwise, I wait 27 minutes for the alarm to go off, and then I go swap sites, start the alarm again, and go away.
That's not playing the game, though. We're playing a game as you would traditionally understand it.
In space, you could kill me if you got a wormhole that spawned in my system, if you were fast going through my intel network, if I actually wasn't paying attention, if I wasn't using Near 2, if people weren't reporting intel properly, etc., etc. Like, the amount of infrastructure required to get there is quite high. And it's, what do I say? It's not like I was uninteractable with. Like, frankly, VNI ratting gives more content than freaking Rourke mining did in the height of the, like, before the nerfs to the tank and everything, so that now they're killable, and when fighters were freaking OP, so defense fleets were easy. And you may argue with that and say, oh, but I saw so many good whaling fleets and bombers bar and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that services maybe 1 to 200 dues for an hour or two a day versus VNI ratting, which is just a constant source of targets for hunters and roamers and PvPers to go through space and have stuff to do.
I would make the argument that you can't really compare VNI ratting to Rourke mining for the simple fact that the scale of which the money you have to put in is tremendously higher. You also are forced to commit yourself to the grid for an X amount of time. You sit there and you could be tackled and you're screwed no matter what you do, even if you do everything right. With the VNI, even if you have 30 of them on grid, if you lose half of them, you're not losing particularly that much money that you cannot recover very quickly, and also the chance of actually losing all of them is slim to none, because you could just warp out immediately. Do that in Oracle. And there is the argument also to be made that Oracle simply just makes more money even today than a single VNI will.
Well, we'll just have to see how the meta adjusts the Ratter AFK meta. I've seen a couple of theories thrown around. We'll see Merms, we'll see Dummies, we'll see Ishtars. So I guess the Ishtar is most likely.
The Ishtar is essentially just a bigger VNI with a slightly better tank. It's frankly, the rare times I have to rat, that's what I use. And guess what I do? I just stare at Netflix the whole time.
Like, people forget VNI wasn't always the king. Even back when the VNI was exactly the way it was, or even better than it was before, or right now, I guess the changes haven't been implemented yet. People didn't trust the tank on the VNI, so nobody used it, and they just used Ishtars. Like, the AFK ratting is not going away, it's just changing its ship type. which I'm a fan of because that's more loss and more incentive for hunters to go around and therefore more content.
This is a good point in the sense that it is a different kind of loss or a more expensive loss or a different type of kill because, let's be honest, if you don't know what you're doing, tackling a VNI has a small margin of being somewhat dangerous. I'm talking if you're going after it in like a Rifter or something. And regularly in Pandemic Horde, our Vexers will kill single little tacklers. Even while being AFK.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because the Ishtars are tankier. A lot of people like to roam around in, what were they, Hecates to go and nuke VNIs because you could insta-warp in prop mode and you had the DPS to nuke VNIs before you died and they could also like nuke light tackle or anything they tried to come in and skirmish with you. That's not going to work against Ishtars anymore. That's not going to work against Dommies. That's not going to work against Myrmidons. So not only are your ratting ships going to be more tanky and more expensive, but that will also propagate down the food chain, or up the food chain in this case, to your hunter ships. Because now you have to have more DPS and more staying power on the grid, because your target's going to be surviving for longer. In any case, I feel like we have belabored this point for too long. Some other highlights from like the content that was shown at eVegas that I'm super excited for. It's more meta. It's not necessarily game changes itself, but it seems like CCP's two main focuses right now are new players and bots. That's the two things that they care about at the top of their mind, at the top of their priority list. And I am okay with this. Other opinions?
I am okay with this. Being not only in Pandemic Horde, but running their new player wing. I see the new players all the time, and I see what their issues are, and I've done this for many years, even before Pandemic Horde. New players don't stay in the game. And I was
that
a little,
retention number.
It's absolutely terrible. I see it both coming into the game and when I have to do purges almost monthly because we hit player cap all the time. And I can tell you exactly which one's logged in and never unlocked again. I was a little happy to hear direct from Fozzie's mouth when I spoke to him that 50% of the numbers make an account and never actually log into the game, and I feel that's not our personal issue. But the number afterwards, like 2 months, 3 months down the road, goes down pretty significantly, and It's always scary to see those numbers. I've always been aware of the numbers in one form or another, but it's always scary to just hear them said aloud over and over again.
Yeah, so to give exact numbers, in Q1 of this year, less than 5% of new accounts in EVE Online made it past the first month.
Since I started the game, the tutorial or new player experience and when I started the game in 2005 was just absolutely archaic by comparison. It's been really, really, really poor, and every time they try to reiterate it, I try to make a new character and go see how it is, but it's always been extremely poor. This is admittedly an exceptionally complex game, and I think people are drawn to it because of its complexity, but also it's so complex that they don't give new players the tools they need to survive their first week. And had I not joined a corporation within the first day, I probably would not be here today. There's so much that they need to iterate on, not just the new player experience, but quality of life changes for new players. Like, it's 2019 now. We don't have a default overview that isn't bullshit. Please explain.
The default overview gets a lot of shit, but I don't think that's the biggest problem.
That I would say that is a significant problem.
I've got to agree with Nidia on this one. It is. It's the first thing players see when they log into the game. They undock the resize windows, and they're presented with this.
Well, they don't even undock first. You spawn in space.
Now you do, yeah. So for killing the single little NPC they teach you to kill on your first few minutes, it's okay. As soon as you warp to your very first Stargate, you don't know what the fuck's going on. God forbid, within the first day or two, you're actually thrown into, say, a corp like Pandemic Horde or Karma Fleet or Dreaded or whatnot, and they say, here's a ship, go PvP, you're lost. Because that overview, never mind you're lost just in general, but that overview alone is totally inadequate for even the most basic fleet.
So, you know what would have been great? Since CCP is prioritizing new players so much.
New overview?
A CSM member who happens to have been working with new players for years and years and years. But you know what we didn't get? A CSM member who happens to be working with PvP or with new players for years and years and years. Well, I say it, we got one. We didn't get the one which Alec and I endorsed on the show.
We got the hero we deserved.
I mean, in some ways, unfortunately.
Yeah. The CSM, that's a whole topic that we could spend on.
Well, we are.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that now.
I was there when they announced it in at Eve North, and it was 100% not surprising.
Really? I think there were some surprises in there.
Really?
Yeah. So a lot of people were expecting there to be two or three, rather, non-null people being elected. And for the record, I'm including Steve in the NullSec group.
Why?
He is typically included on NullSec ballots because of the industry tools that he uses. So that is why I classify him under there. So he has null block support. There were expected to be three slots open, which could be scooped up by people without null block support. And it ended up only being two who got on there. So I think the null block ballot is stronger than some people expected it to be, but also weaker in that there were some interesting candidates who got on who were also on like zero null block ballots.
I think it speaks to the power of the way the voting system works. If you have a lot of people on a lot of ballots, and they're all the same people in that ballot set, they're probably going to get on. We see that the Goon Swarm at least has enough power to elect three people directly. PanFam, it seems, collectively has enough for, what, two?
Yeah,
with Legacy also getting two. So, like, that is the respective voting power of those blocks. I imagine Steve Ronikin benefited from some of the overages there, but I don't know exactly what his placement was on those.
He was at the bottom of the Imperium list. I never saw the Innit list. I'm checking the Horde list now. Unless, Nydia, you have it off the top of your head.
No, but give me a minute.
And then it looks like TP, Test, Brave, they got a couple.
Yeah, so Vili got on for Legacy, and Dunk Dinkle got on for Legacy. Dunk is the only... Dunk was the one who was the new player-related guy. Who actually did get on the CSM, which that was good.
I'll say there were no surprises. I take that back. There was actually one surprise. It was Vili, because Vili doesn't actually log into the game, so...
Oof.
Yeah, shots fired. To be fair, I said that last time I was on the show, right after Test had their quote-unquote deployment. So going back, the official Horde ballot was in order. Gobbins, Killa, Aerospeed Bounty, Dunk Dinkle, Olmeca, Matterall, and then Vili.
That was a surprise for me. Aerospeed Bounty is a fraternity candidate, and it surprised me that fraternity didn't get him on.
So you know what this is telling me, Artemis? That Steve probably didn't get much NullSec block support, period. Like, in terms of meaningful votes.
Well then, who was voting for him? Because high-sec candidates notoriously don't, or high-sec players notoriously don't vote.
It's probably the ones that did vote, plus, I'd say, industrialists that didn't follow the null block ballots they were given. That's my guess.
Well, good on them. If you followed your null block ballot, you're doing it wrong.
I think this is important that, like, you know, the concept that high-sec members don't vote, low-sec members don't vote kind of thing, and only null-sec people do. I would be a lot more interested to see what the breakdown is by actual geographical region, because like you said, Aerospeed is a frat candidate. I'm wondering if, like, Chinese people don't vote as a rule? And if the only real voters are sort of, like, Western nations.
I did notice when doing my candidate interviews that a significant number of the candidates were from the U.S. So I do think there is a cultural aspect to this, that even though, like, Eve is everywhere in the world, the number of people, and even though the EUTZ is larger than the USTZ in Eve, the number of candidates from the U.S. was significantly higher. Then it was more than 50%. It was something like 60 to 70%. I need to go double check my spreadsheet. There were a lot of US people.
This is information I think CCP should release to us. And it's really, like I said, I'm really interested what the voting percentage is within specific nations or continents even. Because I have a funny feeling that sort of Eastern Asian countries and maybe even Eastern European countries don't vote as a rule.
I don't know about that. The Russian bloc usually does really well.
We haven't stated who all got on and the people who we expected to get on that didn't yet.
All right, so the total candidates for your number CSM14. Aerith, Merkel-Chen, and Nominate, Killaby, Steve Renekin, Gobbins, Billy, Dunk Dinkle, Exukis, and Olmeca Gold.
Blue!
Yeah. I was really hoping for Mike Azariah, but I will take Olmeca and give him a shot because he ran a pretty good campaign. He is positioning himself as an outsider candidate. I think it's kind of an open question about how seriously he'll take everything, but I'm very hopeful. He seems like potentially a good advocate for not SOV holders, but other people that interact with SOV holder folks, like small gang PvPers and smaller alliances. So, pretty excited to see what he does. Give him a chance.
I personally can't wait to read the arguments between Villy and Olmeca in the CSM minutes. Because, like, both of them have very strong opinions on ship balance, and both of them are on the CSM, and their opinions on ship balance don't align. So I cannot wait for, like, the minutes to come out and to see the interactions between those two at a summit. That's going to be fun.
I've made an argument going back to since before you were on the CSM twice, Alec, non-consecutively, Mr. Cleveland. And even before then, back when my first CEO was on, it was Jade Constantine all the way back on the first CSM. I don't have an issue with a bloc or a coalition voting in multiple members. I have an issue with a single alliance voting in multiple members. How can we have three Goon Swarm members on a single CSM?
Because they are voting. They have enough voting power to get three on relative to everyone else that is voting.
Right, but should CCP be allowing this?
Yes, absolutely.
No.
I mean, if CCP put in a rule, then people would just use their freaking alts that are outside of their alliance, and boom, problem solved.
It's exactly why you don't hard cap the number of alliance members.
But CCP knows who the alts are, and I will make the argument that I think CCP should allow multiple candidates, because Pandemic Horde had three candidates, in fact, but quite literally two of them were made as backups, and we didn't vote them in. I will make the argument that CCP should allow only one member per alliance onto the CSM at any one time.
Well, like, if somebody ran from the Bastion, would you consider them to be significantly different from somebody running from Goonswarm or from TNT?
As much as we make the joke that they are all goons, they are in fact not all goons. They are culturally different to a point enough that they're not all in Goonswarm. So yes, if there was one Goon guy, one Bastion guy, one TNT guy, one Lawn guy, I would be a lot happier than having three Goonswarm.
Fair enough. I would like to point out that Sword Dragon, who is a longtime member of the CSM, and also the coalition leader of Guardians of the Galaxy, or Dead Coalition, did not get on.
Does this fall under a surprise? Because to me it wasn't.
The way he touted the Russian bloc, and I forget, it was Alec or Nydia who, very, like, 2 minutes ago, said that the Russian bloc usually turns out pretty well in elections. That surprised me.
Maybe, but sort also... So, two things occurred last CSM. One was that Sort was on the Pandemic Horde ballot last year. So we definitely added a lot of votes to him. And the other thing was that he was, quote-unquote, still in good standing with the community as a whole. And while Sort didn't really do anything overly nefarious like certain other CSM members have in the past, he did quite... There's no nice way to put it. He backstabbed his own coalition in a way and went turncoat. And even though the community may not have a stake in that directly based off the game, they don't like people that do that traditionally. And he's not the first CSM to essentially be voted off because of it.
I'd like to point out the judge literally like dissolved his entire alliance and still made it onto the CSM.
But that's because goons.
Yeah.
He did it with no hands, might I add.
No, he had hands. When he did it. His hands were removed afterwards because he did it. Get the story straight. Is that enough rambling on the CSM? Should we move on?
I would just want to point out one more thing. And I know he is well-loved in certain circles, but I was so happy to see Sword Dragon not get on.
Ooh.
I'm sorry, buddy, but I thought it was coming going, my friend. And the fact that Olmeca is the one that beat him is just...
Oh, yeah. He won by 12 votes. So yeah. 12 votes was the amount of votes that resulted in Sword Dragon being kicked out in one of the voting rounds.
That's just fantastic to me. So
for anyone listening, that is literally one goon to one player of all his Royal Call accounts, or 12 people.
Yeah. Can we point this out?
I think I mentioned this last week, and I'm in total agreement.
Does anyone know what we're in agreement about? I'm not sure.
Go for it.
I'm not okay with if you have 100 freaking Omega accounts that you can put in 100 votes.
That's what we agree on.
Yeah, this is super not okay. CCP has all the data about whose account is tied to whose name, because you have a name and you have a credit card information, even if you pay for Plex and all the other information, they know exactly who you are. It should be one player, one vote.
I agree. I would also say that I found it very hilarious in the aftermath hearing of all the Goon Swarm people saying that Omega will basically break the NDA on his way out. I mean, do you know what? Let's add some spice to it, and I'll be interested to see the fireworks, but I think it'll be good.
So here's a question. The dev blog says that we had almost 33,000 unique votes this year, which is a 12% increase from the number of votes last year. Do we think that is because of an increase in engagement with the community, or do we think that's just a 12% increase in the number of alts that people have?
Straight up, it's alts. That's not a significant enough number, in my opinion, to count as player growth, although I think player growth is definitely there in general. I think that more and more people are doing things like getting Rogue alts, getting VNI alts, getting alts for everything. And, you know, it's like, hey, if I only need to log in to put in a vote, I might as well do it on all of them, right? I think that's just a statistical anomaly. 12% isn't huge.
I mean, it ties in with the data. I mean, we've seen from EVE North the retention rate, which is abysmal. So it clearly isn't an influx of new players doing it. But
well,
at the same time,
sorry, go ahead.
I know, and to counter that is the what we'll talk about later, and CCP's blunder, and the fact that people will quite happily make alts for just about any reason.
My thought was it could be like all of the drama surrounding the CSM. Even before the elections happened, you had Briskgate occur, and we had scandals before that and things like that. So the CSM was always in the player base's mind, and CCP has been doing a significantly better job at mentioning it in dev blogs and during talks at EVE events of how important the CSM is to the community itself. As well as when the campaign season and the elections actually happened, we had significantly more people doing actual, like, campaigning this time around. at least based on what I saw. So this could be just selection bias and my personal like engagement with the election cycle, but it seemed like more campaigning was happening. So my question is it also somewhat to do with more engagement than it is an increase in the player base?
I think so, partially. Having seen the CSM come and go for 10 years, I can definitely tell you there are whole CSM numbers that I couldn't name you a single person on them. Mostly because there was, like you said, no campaigning. CCP didn't mention they existed at all, and you would only know them because you knew them. I think this time, the last two or three times, CCP has been, in fact, trying to mention them a little more, like, hey, the CSM did this, or the CSM is directly responsible for this suggestion, as an example, which is good in a way, but also it's the player base has sort of been blaming them directly for a lot of problems, even though, I mean, at the end of the day, the CSM is just, I'm going to come out and say it, is guys that get a free trip to Iceland, as opposed to actually being useful, and it's a deflection for a lot of the members to give them an excuse to be yelled at, as opposed to the devs themselves. Oh, I feel like I struck a nerve now.
I mean, that's some pretty harsh words to say that the CSM isn't useful.
It's a marketing tool. It's always been a marketing tool, and it should be a marketing tool. But I think it's a thinly veiled marketing tool that I would like to see a list of actual accomplishments they've done. Like, this actual mechanic is as a result of discussion with the CSM or suggested by the CSM or had a lot of talks with the CSM.
I think it'd be more useful to see a list of mechanics that didn't occur because yes. It was brought to the CSM. I can tell you one mechanic that I wish had not occurred because it should have been brought to the CSM. And that is the new player SP bundle that was available to all accounts.
Oh, Christ. This.
Well, I mean, Artemis is very bad at following our outlines, but that is a good transition into the starter pack bundle discussion.
So he's a better host than you are, is what you're saying?
Yeah, the 1 million skill points, which is a sizable chunk, available for $5 once per account, but there is no like age limit or anything like that. So even though it was framed as a starter pack, I, as a 14, 15 year player, could just pick it up and inject it right into my account.
And you could also do funky things with character transfers to continually transfer a character from account to account to account, getting more of these things and basically like inject a character up on the cheap, which Jin Tan put a guide about and said, hey guys, this is broken.
Yeah.
They've since come out and I thought addressed it fairly quickly once the community uproar started, but it's still a pretty harsh oversight, I think.
CCP explicitly said you will never be able to buy skill points direct from them. Like, basically every skill point is going to come from either a Christmas gift or out of someone's head. Okay, I'm okay with this, to a point. A lot of people are mad, including people that you and I both know with important names, let's put it that way, and they're hopping mad. I feel like not restricting this to like a 30-day-old noob or someone making a new account is more oversight. And having been here for 15 years, I feel like, oh, hey, CCP just fucked up and forgot to put in a number, as opposed to actual malice or a money grab.
Well, for the record, CCP has sold skill points via, like, stuff you can buy on Steam. They even mentioned that in the dev blog where CCP Falcon addressed this. They were like, hey, we do this on Steam already, where you can buy skill points. It's just those are limited to new players and new accounts.
If you think about it, the Cerebral Accelerators they've been selling, all that kind of stuff, that's all ways to... It's not like a X amount of skill point injection, but you're getting more over time, so it does add up to some amount over time. You know, those are all artificial skill point injections into the game.
But with the exception of starter packs, which have been around in EVE for many, many years regardless, things like cerebral accelerators, which are indirectly skill points, you tend to not be able to get those outside of very special events in-game or special events out-of-game.
I mean, the problem, I don't think we can include indirect methods of skill point generation in this discussion, because if you do, then somebody buying Plex, selling Plex to buy implants, and using those implants is getting an indirect buff to their skill
the
point
thing.
Generation.
It's
so I feel like we have to draw the line at skill points not generated by a character.
Okay.
Again, I'll say again, having been here for almost 15 years now, I attribute it more that someone on CCP forgot to put a time limit as opposed to actual malice or money grab. Because how much money are they really making off this single promotion?
Not tons.
They're not paying one guy's salary, basically.
Especially with the short duration that it was out.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you're probably right, especially because they walked it back so quickly. It has the hallmarks of, oh shit, we made a code mistake, rather than, hey, we need to talk to the boss about redoing our marketing strategy to, like, RMTing skill points. Because the turnaround time was, what, like 48 hours?
I think it was even less than that.
Yeah.
But the outrage was enormous. Not like burn everything down in Carnegie, but it was very, very high.
Yeah, no doubt. But it just didn't seem... The timeline seems to suggest that, like, everyone at CCP was aligned that this was an obvious error or mistake, and I don't think that would be the case if they had intended to start scaling, really intended to start selling skill points en masse.
I mean, again, it was the day after Eve North ended, and having been there, everyone was drunk as fuck. I'm sure someone put in the wrong number and was like, oh god, and only realized it when all the Reddit threads went up.
So is this the sort of problem that we're hoping the CSM could prevent in the future, or is this an error that the CSM won't have any impact on?
This is an error that the CSM will have zero impact on.
It depends if it was actually a technical error. If it's a technical error like Nitty and I are hypothesizing that it is, then the CSM really wouldn't have any impact, because they would get told about the concept.
They wouldn't in either case. Even if it wasn't an impact, let's say the CCP tomorrow says, hey, we're going to start selling gold World of Tanks ammo for you guys. It's $50 for 50 units, and people start buying it. And that's the only way to compete in PvP now. If the CSM started actually burning down the offices, they would do nothing. You know why? Because money.
I don't know if it's quite as simple as that, but I can only speak from my experience on the CSM that it is very difficult to get CCP to change its strategic direction. The times that it was attempted were not very successful.
So then, what's your hope for the current CSM to do? Like, what? It seems like you're jumping on the Nidia bandwagon of the CSM is useless here, Alec.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that if CCP CEO, if Hillmar comes down and says, hey, we need to go sell gold ammo, no amount of the CSM telling them how bad of an idea that is going to be is ultimately going to change their minds.
Yep.
But there's a lot of room between that and the day-to-day goings-on of developing, maintaining, and promoting EVE.
I mean, you can make the argument that every time there's a 15% Plex sale, it's the same thing. It's not, but it's along the same lines. You're not going to tell people not to do the Plex sale because people like the Plex sales because reasons. It's cheaper. It makes the price of Plex cheaper, etc., etc. Again, like you said, there's a long difference between a slight Plex sale, which effectively is the same thing as, hey, let's sell gold ammo.
The Plex sale is a good example because CCP is not going to go to the CSM and say there were no Plex sales. CCP is not going to go to the CSM every time they want to experiment with changing Plex price or running a sale or promotion of some kind.
No, because it's not any of CSM's business to actually talk about business. That's what the board is for.
Well, hang on. Isn't that what the CSM was instituted for to begin with? Because of Monoclegate and because of worries about microtransactions and the way that Eve was monetizing its player base.
You're talking
about... That was long after the CSM was created, A. B, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Plexus specifically. So what the CSM might get consulted on is, like, the price of Plex in-game and how that is affecting people and... Plex mechanics, how well players are or aren't using them. What are some exploits around Plex that we need to keep be aware of if we plan on messing around with the Plex price? Those are all key things. And I can also say keeping track of CCP's manipulation of the Plex market in terms of directly injecting Plex into it was also a source of a lot of oversight from the CSM. But that's not the same as telling the sales department when they can and can't start a Christmas sale.
I would make the argument if you only start a Christmas sale around Christmas. If you're not going to have one in June.
No, but day after Thanksgiving.
Christmas in July, isn't there?
Yeah, Christmas in July, day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, Amazon Prime Day, you know.
Ugh, don't remind me.
Actually, Prime Day, no, baby!
I'm looking forward to Prime Day because I get a whole boatload of overtime at work. It's going to be great.
I'm actually really excited for Prime Day this year. Really, really excited.
Steam's on my sale on right now.
Anyway, that's like the kind of fine detail that's just not realistically going to happen. And on the other end of it, say, like, the decision to never do Plex sales again, and Helmar wants to do that. The CSM can stomp their feet all they want, but if it's an order from the CEO, they're not going to be counteracting that.
So then, what would you hope the CSM would do in this term, Alec? If they're not going to be able to change the direction of CCP if it comes down from the top, what are you hoping that they do?
Are we assuming that the selling skill points is an intentional direction change?
No, we're assuming it is unintentional.
Yeah, then I would tell them, hey, well, keep pointing to this incident as evidence to not ever do that.
Okay, but how about more generally speaking? Like, what are your hopes for this?
Oh, I see. I would like to see the CSM focus a little less on kind of the mass communications with people and do a little more focused but higher profile communications. So everyone talks about the communication of the CSM and how it needs to be better, and I'm going to run X number of town halls, and now we're going to make this Discord server, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. And that is good. Being accessible to the voting public is good. But it also makes it really difficult to focus on things. And I think with the competition for information, and frankly the competition for attention that Eve has among the player base's lives in general, that becomes more challenging. So I would like to see more bigger scale communications from the CSM in terms of like reach, substance, and production value than just the summit minutes. I'd like to see something a little more frequent than that so we can get a better idea of what's going on without having to constantly ask or constantly monitor several different flows of information.
The summit minutes, which usually come weeks after the summit and tend to be the only communication that is released between the CSM and CCP at all because of the NDA. I appreciate there needs to be an NDA based off the industry they're in. There's just absolutely no transparency. Like I said, to me, the CSM is, you have won a free trip to Iceland.
I mean, I don't doubt they're doing tons of work, but it'd be great to get a little more insight into what that is.
But why should I care? I have not voted for the CSM since the first one. I told you this when you were running.
You didn't vote for me, did you?
You didn't vote for Gobbins?
I voted for no one. I have not voted since the first one.
I completely disregard your opinion now.
Do you know why? Because there is no transparency whatsoever. And again, I appreciate there's an NDA, but there is no release of information effectively beyond the summit minutes. So we effectively have no idea what the fuck is actually going on or what is being discussed. And a 5-year NDA, okay, we all want to find out what happens after 5 years, but it's not relevant by then. There needs to be a little bit more sane release of information on a sane timeline. You don't have to tell us exactly what Helmar had for breakfast, but we need to know what's going on. What are you accomplishing? What are you not accomplishing? If it's not working, it would be nice to know, but why should, in my case, a 14, 15-year-old player give a shit if I never know what's going on and I have to sort through the information based off the Reddit thread of the summit minutes 6 weeks after it comes out?
I mean, if you can't be bothered to read the summit minutes, I don't think you really can ask for more information to be put out there if you're not consuming the information already being put out.
But by then, it's not relevant, is it?
It is entirely.
Yeah, it usually is.
In fact, quite a bit of the minutes have to be redacted because it's so relevant. It would, like, harm the way that they intend to release stuff. Like, stuff is still actively in development, so they can't release information on it because it is just that relevant.
And don't get me wrong, I'd like to see the minutes come out faster, too. Some CSMs have been better at that than others. But you haven't read those? Okay. Then what more do you want given to you?
Again, it's, you know, a more transparent release of information. Like I say, you don't need to release everything or what's dangerous to the industry to release, but...
But you already don't consume the limited amount that they already put out.
I read the Reddit thread. Get the cliff notes. The stuff that we're supposed to be outraged on. I go to Reddit to understand what I'm supposed to be mad about.
No obstruction, no collusion. Got it. Okay.
You know what Reddit is mad at? Wait a minute. Is Reddit mad about the Drifters, or is Reddit happy about the Drifters? I can't tell. I need a second opinion.
It seems like most of the memes are happy.
Depends on which side you're on. Well, happy, I think, is the overriding thought.
Let's transition into that, because I've been dying to talk about it. Drifters take my energy. The Triglavian invasion actually invading now, instead of just being some PvE shit that spawns randomly.
What?
And not
Drifters
even the Triglavians.
Drifters are shooting things, not Triglavians.
Trigs, sorry.
No. Drifters are invading. Triglavians are in HiSec being nuked by Care Bears.
Ah, excuse me. Well,
the Drifters wanted a piece of the action.
Still cool.
I mean, there are many tinfoil theories that now the Triglavian invasions are going to expand out into NullSec, and we're going to have fights between the Triglavians and the Drifters. So that is an active tinfoil thread. But for now, it is just Drifters roaming around killing people, like killing ships. There are a bunch of ships just dying to Drifters all over the place. And they're also reinforcing structures, which is not new, right? Drifters and specifically the Diamond Rats have been reinforcing structures for a while, but they haven't come back and finished them off. And now the Drifters are coming back and finishing off Hall Timers.
Yeah, they've already claimed an Ansiblex.
Yep, Horde Ansiblex and UG.
Ripperuni, they reinforced a friggin' Keepstar, so that's the scale at which we're talking.
As I understand it, there's currently a bug which lets them ignore damage cap. So they can come in there with a bunch of them and their super weapons and nuke a structure without having to care about damage cap.
Yep, I watched them reinforce one of our Retaros in less than 5 minutes today. I like this. But, I think this is cool. I like the concept of having a literal force of nature running around and doing things, and us having to deal with it as opposed to just the players, because, you know, you get to a certain age and you don't give a shit about NPCs anymore. They're just sort of ants to step on. This makes them not those ants. They're actually kind of scary. Here's where I have a problem. They don't follow CCP's own fucking rules. Here's an example. I'm sitting in the Keepstar watching 30 Drifter battleships and cruisers shoot at me, and I'm shooting back at them. The Doomsday device does not work on them, where it works on every other fucking ship in the game, except Drifters, apparently. So I'm having to fire them with conventional weapons and get a whole fleet to form to go after them. If Goon showed up with a force double that size, I could have wiped them out with the Doomsday device. Why can't I do this? Also, please explain to me why they're able to warp to people on grid within 10 seconds of each other. if that, like, they have perfect probing skills, and explain to me why they have target locking, target break locking mechanics on a keep star, so I have to keep constantly relocking them, and explain to me why they're able to engage targets 1,000 kilometers away, 3 times max lock range for us.
It's balance, bro.
Okay, so like, they're broken as crap
this
right now.
This makes me mad. No, this makes me mad because at the keynote in Eve North, you had CCP Burger saying specifically, we use actually PIFA to fit these ships and treat them as player ships. Bull fucking shit.
Well, he
because
was
I don't
talking...
know a single player ship that could do anything they just said like that.
He was talking about the Triglavian invasion ships, to be clear, and the Drifters came out before the Triglavian invasion ships.
He was talking about the mining ships, the mining NPCs, and things like that. So how can you have whole fleets of these ships that are more powerful than the Capsuleer ships, okay, and not following any of the same rules? Complete and utter bullshit. I'm sorry. Yes, I think the Doomsday device and things like that would be a little overpowered, but we shouldn't need to form 250 guys to go after 4 fucking Drifter fleets simultaneously that are reinforcing everything and their grandmother and engaging every single noob on the way with perfect skills 1,000 kilometers away. Because that's actually happening. They're sitting on our structures and shooting people at the gates.
I mean, I both agree and disagree. It sounds like some of the things they're doing are so far beyond player capabilities that it's really questionable. But in general, I would expect endgame content NPCs to be challenging to players, probably more challenging than a ship of an equivalent class if a player was flying.
There is a difference between challenging and powerful and endgame content, and there's a difference between that and broken and does not actually follow your own game's fucking rules.
Okay, well, let's continue this discussion under the hypothetical that CCP fixes the brokenness of the Drifters so that they interact in a quote-unquote fair way with the player base. So no more like 1,000 kilometers engaging things. They can be locked. They can be doomsdayed. They work like you would expect them to work, but they're still using their current behavior. What are our opinions on that hypothetical?
This would be good. I like the concept of having relatively dangerous NPCs to shake up things, to make things a little more interesting, maybe even to smaller groups that don't necessarily have to have PvP 24/7. I like I said, I'm interested in having quote-unquote a force of nature running around and being a threat that we have to think about during the day. You know, it's like, hey, you know, Drifters are showing up in our sights. We need to actually shoot them down. Should there be 30-man Drifter fleets running around that are, you know, the target lock breaking mechanics 1,000 kilometers away? No. But on paper, I think this is a really good idea and I'm really interested.
Yeah, I'm pretty for it. Like, them showing up to hit structures and shake things up in areas that maybe are a little quiet sounds great. And I've been asking, not asking for it, but, you know, I've been hoping for a long time that they sort of put a little development time into this Eve is a living world thing where the NPCs are doing stuff and they're kind of doing their own thing and then it can interact with players and you can interact with them. The idea of something going around reinforcing inactive structures and killing them off has been, oh god, a wet dream at this point with all the shitty structures they're sitting around. Speaking of which, Drifters and HiSec, let's go.
Well, hang on. They have to get to the all of NullSec first. Like, right now, they've only been in SovNull. We haven't seen any confirmed reports of them killing anything in even NPC Null, let alone LowSec and HiSec.
Yeah, that's a worthwhile thing. We were discussing it at the start of the show, and none of us could find any accounts of them hitting NPC NullSec space. Unless you're aware of some, Nydia. But certainly I haven't heard of anything like that in Great Wildlands and Syndicate. No one's mentioning anything about Venal getting hit, so...
I'm not saying it's not happening. I would have to dig through Zed Gilboard for quite a while. That being said, places like Great Wildlands and Venal don't have as much infrastructure in those in the Jovian Observatory systems, which is where we're seeing the majority of the shit occurring. this is not as much population. I mean, we're talking about this is occurring in BWF. We have a keep starting like 20 structures there and noobs all day long. So we notice it right away when it's occurring. Again, I'm not saying it's not happening. That being said, it would not surprise me if CCP tweaked it a little manually to be like, let's poke Horde and goon staging.
Well, oh, so you're saying this is related to the Jove observatories? Well, what's that data about?
In our specific cases, we've seen almost exclusively, if not exclusively, these large drifter fleets occurring in systems with Jove observatories. And in this, in a very specific case, BWF at the Keepstar, there is one there. In a bit of unusual behavior, it's been reported to me is that we're seeing these fleets arrive without unidentified wormholes that usually accompany them.
Honestly, that it seems to me that this is kind of like CCP's kind of I kind of wanted to see it for a while, but almost like an entropy mechanic, a way of large entities having some manner of decay, some manner of the environment fighting back at them relative to their size. So you don't tend to get huge entities in Great Wildlands, for example, or Syndicate, but the large ones with lots of infrastructure. And let's not forget that in terms of the lore, a lot of, if I recall correctly, the things like Enktosis stuff and a lot of the Sovereign stuff was, I think the lore kind of tracks back to the first kind of engagements versus sleepers and drifters anyway.
If that is true, if CCP is designing the rats and the AI to scale with the scale of infrastructure and player organization, I am super freaking hyped. Because this is going to be the first time in which the game gets harder as your organization gets larger.
Uh-huh.
That would definitely interest me. And some things I would like to see also is sort of this becoming a day-to-day problem as opposed to a hurricane watch in terms of the 30 battleships coming at you. I'd like to see something along the lines of, you live in Geminate, you're doing your havens, and instead of Grista's dreadnought spawning at the end randomly, it's a drifter battleship, so get fucked.
Art makes a really great point. This is the first time that I can think of that the game itself, not just the meta logistics around maintaining your coalition, but the game itself gets harder as your organization gets better and more developed. I can't think of another case where that's true.
A somewhat tangential case could be made for capital escalations and wormholes, where the more caps you brought in, the more rats spawned, but I don't think those two are really comparable.
No, that's more of an if-then statement. If you warp in here, then this many ships spawns. And even then, it doesn't quite scale because it only spawns so many ships, and you will have so many ships to deal with it.
And you can easily escape it. It's not like an existential challenge for your group.
Yeah, like your structures can't just walk away. Your structures are stuck there.
Right.
Neither can your subcaps, to be fair. They these guys point and web at 300 kilometers.
This is sort of why I've equated them to being a force of nature, because it really feels like they are a literal storm that's in the area and you have to be wary of.
Next best thing to shoot in Concord. Alright, let's get into some host highlights. I've been moving, as I talked about in the previous episode, finally settled in my new apartment. I haven't set up my streamer microphone yet, that's still coming, but everything else is good. And it's really nice. I had the opportunity to log in and play from the hotel at one point that I had been staying at. I logged in to defend our 9UI Market Freeport, which continues to generate content at a fairly regular cadence. And Providence came to attack it again. We hopped on to save it, got saved, and what followed was a massive brawl in an adjacent system. And it was, whew, it was like another 50-bill killed cap brawl between Wrecking Crew, PanFam versus Providence, and Legacy.
Is Provi still using Macarials? Because I really want to make a joke about the fact that Provi is using Macarials while the rest of EVE is using Megathrons.
I believe they were, yeah.
Fantastic.
There's a lot of Macarials and Minions running around on both sides, really.
Probably is using Macarials while the rest of EVE is using Megathrons. Just let that sink in.
I'm not using them very well, unfortunately.
It's always nice to see Providence consistently 4 or 5 years behind the rest of the game. It's like they're literally playing on Serenity, but they're here.
Goddamn. But this was cool. It was my first fight, like a big fight in a hick. And I have to say, it was super fun. I was kind of playing a little loose and dangerous with it. I was like flying right in on the Macarials where they wouldn't be able to track me. Bubbling their entire fleet for extended periods of time. I almost died once or twice. We managed to get clawed back by our Logi. I was disabling scrams on sabers. It was a lot of fun. Gotta say, I definitely would do it again.
I think there's so much more they could do with Hicks. I just really want them to have a script that basically turns it into a mobile Sino Jammer.
Yeah, that'd be kind of neat. Something to pull people out of warp, mid-warp, would be, and might require a physics engine change, but I think that's super needed as well. Yeah, like, not just pull you to a different point on the grid, but pull you off to a different grid entirely.
Is it one of the Titans or something? Has like a doomsday that does that?
The GTFO, yeah.
Well, that takes you from one grid and throws you somewhere else, which I also love.
Super boosh.
Yeah, but it's like the Interdiction Sphere ships from Star Wars have the same idea. You don't get where you're going, it pulls you out in the middle. Obviously, you have to be correctly placed, but...
I don't want to be involved with advocating the concept that CCP totally ripped off the Thrawn novels and exactly copied those ships exactly for Interdictor. I don't want to be sued.
Honestly, that's what I'd do with Hicks, but I'd also give sabers an ammunition that can be used in low set that does the same thing. That doesn't water disrupt warp, but block Sinos. Bring Interdictors into low sec.
Why can't they have, like, web bubbles?
Ooh, I do kind of like
because
that.
Those are super capital AoE weapons.
And Citadel class weapons, burst projectors.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I don't believe...
Remind me never to let Nydia have a conversation with the dev about balance, because you're just going to break the freaking game.
Yep, let's go.
Luckily, we never have to worry about him running for CSM, because he doesn't think they do anything.
I said too many bad words.
In any case, my host highlight was going to be something else, but Alec reminded me that my host highlight is actually different. So I recently spent a lot of time... and a lot of money, with the help of Talking and Stations, upgrading my audio equipment. So hopefully, the listener has noticed that my audio is significantly better than it was in the past, or at least marginally better, I'd hope. For those who care, I'm using a Rode NT1 condenser mic. I have that routed through a DBX286S preamp and processor into a Focusrite 2i2 audio interface, and then into my PC. I have not yet fully utilized all of the processes that I can do with the 286S, so my audio quality should be getting better with that. And then I also have a bunch of, what's it called, acoustic paneling that I need to put up in my room to remove echo and other ambient noises that you can probably hear right now.
Ooh.
So hopefully, we'll just keep on getting better.
Yeah, I would love to get a proper... recording sound booth type thing for future shows. If I like could build a house from scratch, I would definitely make sure that's a thing. Paneling with like the glass situation. Yeah.
Welcome to Declarations of Carpentry starring Alexia Cart.
I'd watch that.
Yeah, you watch that? Watch me build a table.
This old mobile depot.
Lave.
Yeah, moving on from carpentry. My highlight was a crazy little kind of corp run we had. We brought the old hyperspatial syllables from LowSec over here, and we were pretty light on tackle. What followed was about 30 minutes of chasing around these really slippery guys in T3Ds and command destroyers who we had three of them into deep structure, but due to lack of webs, we couldn't either stop them from pushing away or going away. I left that room super pissed because we just didn't kill anyone. The hyperspatial symbols are the thing that we had back in low set. They're basically RT symbols with two tecting hyperspatial rigs, so they go about 7 AU a second. So only scepters can outrun or catch them.
Wow.
And they did really well. It's just we didn't have any like hard tackle, which is fucking horrible. But then the previous day we dropped zero on like three cruisers that dropped on the Horde mining fleet with like Rail Hecates and just introduced them to Tech 2 comms.
Lave having his usual impact on any alliance he joins.
Making them get a Hecate doctrine.
Not yet, not got a Horde to do it just yet, but it's a work in progress.
Nids, your highlight?
Being at an Eve meet in Toronto and telling and helping to give all the foreigners and Icelandic devs the concept of being completely addicted to Bloody Caesars and Poutines to the point where they had them every single goddamn meal.
Is it Poutines or Poutines?
A Poutine. And Poutine.
For the audience members like myself who have no idea what either of those things are we just going to leave it as a surprise, or can you explain?
Okay, you take Bloody Caesar is essentially like a Bloody Mary, except you're replacing the tomato juice with Clamato juice. And a poutine is a Quebec delicacy where it's French fries smothered with brown gravy and cheese curds. Sounds horrible, but it's absolutely addictive.
I was about to say, both of those things sound absolutely horrible.
Just shut up and go try it. Just do it.
No, I don't think it will.
Nydia, not a good salesman, not a good CSM member.
Ta-da!
No, I don't think I will. Alright, some shout-outs as we close out the show. I want to give my shout-out to Night Jester and Kestrel Swainson for holding it down in Cairns while I've been moving. I can't say enough how appreciative I am of Night Jester and everything he does for Capitalist Army. He is just a terrific dude and really passionate about the Corp. And admittedly lining his own pockets, but you know, those things go hand-in-hand when you're in Capitalist Army. And Kestrel's really stepped up to be an active force in our U.S. time zone. He's been really great leading fleets, recruiting people, logistics, moving stuff around. So just want to give him a little hat tip. Thanks, guys.
My shout-out is also changing from what it is on the Google Doc, and it goes to Nydia Masters. He may not be a good salesman. He may not be a good CSM member, but at least he's a half-decent director.
I mean...
Please don't kick me.
Well, you'll live this week.
That's pretty good. My shout-out is Drifters, take our energy.
Nids?
My shout-out is to Quim Phaeton, who put me up for Eve North after I bitched that I didn't want to go for a whole week, and to CCP Fozzie for putting up with my bullshit and being a fangirl and talking to him for too fucking long one night.
Wow, he has been talking to devs. Uh-oh.
You're screwed.
I hope Fozzie wasn't too drunk. But who are we kidding?
No, I hope Fozzie was drunk enough he doesn't forget or he doesn't remember a word.
It just blacks out. Alright guys, that's it. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in our poll. As always, Capitalist Army is recruiting and we can use a few good capitalists. We have been experiencing quite a bit of growth in the US time zone in particular. We're still looking for more people. We're getting regular content with Templus Calcif, and it's freaking great. The water is just fine in Great Wildlands, even if you don't want to join the Corp. Come on out to N6, move your Corp out there, come fight us, come mine with us. It can work either way. But just give it a shot. Take the plunge into NullSec in a way that's not connected to Sov, and kind of carve your own destiny out there. Or if you are into Sov and plan on roaming it quite a bit, head over to 9UI and pick up some more ammo.
And you'll be safe from drifters.
Yes. Join Capitalist Chat in-game for more info. It's got a link to our Discord in there. You can hop on in, chat us up. Wherever you are and whoever you're flying with. Good hunting, listeners.